look, I even put on more makeup to be more traditionally feminine.
More trad wifey, yeah. Mm-hmm. You should be wearing an apron, obviously. But, you know.
You don't know that I'm not.
I couldn't impose that. That would be extremely patriarchal. So maybe I should put on an apron. I have an apron with a cat on it, which is, you know, very
of course you
soft
do.
Boy. Very soft boy of me. So, you know.
Like, I do have baking flour on my jeans. I did make bread yesterday.
How did it go?
Not in preparation. Total. It's like no knead bread. It's very easy and low effort, and you know, rising.
You always need bread.
Modernity. Yeah, and also like just waking up and having a hunk of bread, like a French peasant, feels really good.
No, you feel fulfilled. You feel like you've contributed something. Yeah,
you're ready to hit the fields.
That's the problem with alienation. You end up thinking making bread is meaningful. anyway. Hello, everyone. Welcome to BungaCast, the global politics podcast at the end of history. Today, we're discussing mothers and boys. So I think most listeners will be one of those, have been one of those, are going to be one of those. If you don't fall into one of those categories, I'm sure this will still be interesting and there'll be lots to learn and to follow along from. That voice you hear if you're just listening along is Amber Lee Frost. Hi, Amber.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on again.
And fellow Bunga boy, George Hoare, whom we haven't heard from yet.
No, but I am here.
You are there, very much there. So we're going to be talking, as I say, about mothers and mothers and boys, which I feel like I'm going to try to think of some musical kind of interlude to stick in there. And I'm going either with Danzig's mother or that clip from Arrested Development.
Yeah, no, mother I was boy. Thinking Mother Boy, which is
one
of the best. God, what a good show. There's no TV on. I'm going back and watching the classics.
I couldn't sleep. I always get this way before Mother Boy.
Oh, God. It's Mother Boy already?
Mother Boy was a dinner dance aimed at promoting mother-son bonding. Lucille had gone over 25 times with Buster, and on a few occasions had won cutest couple. As one entered sexual maturity and the other one left it, it became harder to win.
I'm so hot.
God, if you were hot, Mother, we would win.
It's not just Mother Boy, it's Mother Boy 30. And I think with you, I've got a shot.
Oh, no. What, Buster, for the first time ever, doesn't want to do this?
No, he does. It's just, he's been so mopey.
Well, that could have something to do with the fact that a seal ate his hand.
I don't know what it is.
I think that's what it is.
Oh, no.
I could probably go through Arrested Development for a 10th time now. Still not exhausted it. Anyway, so we're firstly, I think we'd like to make an announcement for those who aren't aware. The third issue of Damage magazine is coming out soon, and the third print edition, and it's about mothers. And there's articles as well as from Amber's. There are articles from more than one Amber. So it's
actually plural of Amber is Ambi. So
right. So it is from Ambi, and we have there's also articles by Catherine Liu, Jesse Walker of Reason Magazine, Benjamin Fife, who regular listeners of the podcast will have seen on this podcast talking about the big dick industry. There's articles about daycare, about the pursuit of family, Dustin Guastella, who we've also had on the podcast before, and various other things. I don't know if you guys want to pick out anything that you want to highlight from the upcoming issue focusing on mothers, or why indeed mothers is an interesting topic.
I just want to say that I picked the theme. Maybe there was a lot of sort of like matricidal energy. Like that I was picking up with on, and it started earlier than this. It started with like, did you know your favorite feminist is problematic? And I think when they went after Barbara Ehrenreich, I got the most. And it was just like, respect your mother. Who are you? How about a left for filial piety?
George, any strong feelings about mothers in general, your own mother? We can have this now.
Are
we don't
you pro,
need to do this now
anti?
Either.
Yeah, I would say I'm pro. I would say, you know, everyone has one. So yeah, there you go. I think it's a great issue. I think that there's for listeners or for people who will be reading, you can check out the top 10 movie mothers. There's some good ones in there. See if your favorite is there. Yeah.
Because
there's obviously always the serious
list,
stuff.
Honestly, that should be its own magazine, like a quarterly or something, you know. Just a brief
survey
of
mothers. Magazine.
Yeah.
Just lean into the Freudianism really hard, like a little bit too deliberately. So we're also going to be talking after a bit of chat about mothers, about men, boys, young men, depending mm-hmm. on how you want to classify them. We've talked about this a bit on the podcast before, probably more recently in a couple of episodes about gender divergences amongst young people in voting behavior, which is maybe a slightly obtuse way of talking about it. But basically, young men are voting for the right and young women are voting for the left in quite strongly marked and divergent ways, which is interesting and something which I don't think anyone's got a full grasp on why that is. We've also talked about incels in the past and the, I guess, male role models. We've also touched upon that. Anyway, so this is another way of delving back into this discussion. And we'll do that in the second half of this episode. But to start off, I want to ask Amber about her article, which is about trad wives. So maybe as a way to start this, we can start the way that you start your article, which is talking about the characters of trad wifery.
Yeah, I have to say that I almost just like ended up not turning this in because I'm like, I picked something too meaty. I'm so sorry. There are too many. And at first I'm like, I'll do a brief survey. But the entire thing about trad wives is that they have nothing in common beyond a label. And I think, too, they'll be like, I don't identify as that. Like some of them will be. Some of them will be sort of avoidant of the term. Actually, I don't want to be dismissive about that because I think kind of the whole point, you know, I use this Bob Dylan metaphor. You know, why was it weird that Bob Dylan went into seclusion when seclusion just meant he was kind of a work at home dad and like didn't do a lot of interviews and put out
extremely
a bunch of
offline.
Albums? Yeah, exactly. That era's version of extremely offline, but not even that offline. They're like, where is he? It's like, well, he's just not touring. He's just taking care of his kids. And it's like, well, why is that seclusion? Why is that a normal life for the average person? You know, within the realm of, but if you have a certain amount of wealth and comfort or whatever, that's a pretty conventional choice to make, is to just sort of chill out in the country. And, you know, during COVID, all of these well-to-do people bought their houses upstate in New York and like then they sold them because like, oh, I hate the country. But, you know, why is that different? Oh, because he's Bob Dylan. Because people are trying to watch him. So that's like the first entry into it. You know, why is sort of being a stay-at-home mom, and some of it's very extreme, but like the Christian stuff, people are like, oh, she's like a trad wife, she's Christian. It's like, you know, that's like a lot of women like that aren't online. You don't consider it weird unless you're watching.
Yeah. I mean, you have a good line. Yeah, it's only eccentric when there's an audience, which I guess is like saying it's only a thing if someone's watching. But that goes, I guess that goes for a lot of internet-y things. But the trad wife is obviously a kind of meme character. And everybody who's listening to this probably can draw up the image of what that, like the trad wife, I don't know if it's a Wojak or some relative of the Wojak, maybe married to Wojak or Wojak's, I don't know, whatever. But anyway, there's an image there. But it's one that I think probably has overflowed online into the real world, as a lot of online stuff tends to do these days. And so I think it's certainly something worth reflecting on and like, it was absolutely worth writing about. I'm glad to have read your article, Amber, because I'm not going to spend a lot of time looking at trad wife influencers, but I think it's interesting.
I love it.
It's great. but it's like, it's interesting if it's something has a name that has a single label, and behind it actually is a whole plethora of different things, which, as you say, don't seem to exactly match up. So what are some of the examples? Why does trad wife not really, leaving aside the point about it only being a kind of internet-y thing, but what are the characters of the trad wives? You describe some of them.
There are so many. That's the weird thing, is that there are all these ones that I couldn't cover. There were like, you know, there's a Pentecostal girl that I love. I've led a Pentecostal Appalachian family, and she was a nurse and she hated it. And one of the big tenets of Pentecostalism, you're not supposed to cut your hair. And so she became an influencer with her own brand of like vitamins for hair stuff. And I'm like, girl, it doesn't work or whatever. It's or maybe it works a little. But I really kind of love her. She's very sweet. But then there's like this wealthy chick that like married a guy and she's a lazy eye, and like nobody can stop talking about her lazy eye because it's really distracting to have like a trad wife that isn't like this, that has like a visible disability. There's like homesteaders. Some of them are like weird conspiracy theorists. Some of them are like sort of anarcho, maybe accelerationist. And then some of them, there's this one lady I follow who's like, yeah, this is our homestead. And we're not like weird about it though. Like, you know, we still like vote and have like abortion. And by the way, this isn't for everybody. We just kind of like it, which again, used to be called farming. It used to be called being a farmer. Very normal. And then like the three that I picked, one is kind of the subject of alarmism, is Gwen the milkmaid, which is very funny. And she does have kind of a, like, the Rhine gives its gold to the sea, like, kind of uber wench thing to her. And, like, that was a lot of alarmism for the sort of, like, liberal feminist thing. And like, this is white supremacist. And it's not, like, I mean, maybe there probably are some, but, like, it's more that it rhymes and it's become a kind of a floating signifier, the dress with the bustier, and it's largely disconnected.
Just to show how kind of widespread this is, even in a non-Anglophone, middle-income country like Brazil, which you may have heard of, you get a congresswoman who is a Bolsonaro-aligned congresswoman, who like got famous for always wearing kind of that kind of midsummer. Some even, I think, joked calling her like the midsummer, you know, the film Midsummer, the Netflix kind of folk
great
horror.
Movie. Also would have been a fantastic mother contribution.
Lots of trad moms in there, I guess. Mm-hmm. If just purely because of the aesthetics, even if they're not traditional mothers. But anyway, no spoilers. But, you know, she wears a crown of flowers in her hair, this Bolsonarista congresswoman, and like his post photos of her with assault weapons and all this kind of stuff, and a lot of it's kind of imported from the US. But you know, just to say that this is not just a kind of Anglosphere internet thing, this is like an actual real federal deputy, a congresswoman who's like plays along with this role and uses these same aesthetics. So
well, and
you know,
I think
we're
it's
stupid
one of those,
everywhere.
I think it's one of those things that, like, first of all, it started with like men kind of online troll, like, oh, I want a trad wife. And it's like, well, you have to, like, Angela Nagel talks about this. It's like, well, you know, that was based off of a social contract where you like worked and didn't post all day. The thing is, women actually made it real. Like, women took the memification of it, whether they identify or not, and like actually did it. And I think that kind of, I think a lot of those men are really ambivalent about it because they're figuring out, oh, those do exist, but I don't get one. But then, you know, there's the American cultural hegemony, which it's what a British friend of mine refers to. And he's black, he's African, but he's like British, and I think he has dual citizenship or whatever. And he's like, "Why can't you run up these Black Lives Matter things?" And like, they're just copying America. Like, you know, this is not Black people in the UK don't have the same lives. You know, the life expectancy is higher. Like the, you know, there aren't like just basically police executions. He's like, it's like American cultural hegemony that we're all just imitating America because they don't know what to do. And I think part of that is the internet. But part of it's just like, we're very loud and we're good at memes as a nation.
Yeah. The last remaining American art form, maybe. I guess just a question.
At least we make something in this country.
Yeah. Don't offshore that. You need to keep that in on American shores, the meme factories. So say a listener is kind of considering becoming a trad wife. What do you have to do to be a trad wife? Is it as simple as you stay at home and you post about cooking and farming?
Yeah,
is there anything else? I mean, am I being too simplistic? So I'm thinking there probably are some listeners who are not terminally online.
I have a ton of, like, I joke with like a couple friends of mine, girlfriends who are all like very successful career women after the kind of like they recovered after 2008, you know, but so they remember like dire desperation working, like some of them still work like 60 hours a week and like these grueling conditions and stuff, and they're just like, why can't my husband just let me stay home? And I'm like, yeah, my goal is to make my boyfriend earn more than me so I can be a housewife, which is a joke. I like the being sort of self-directed in ways that are monetizable, which is a nice side effect. But yeah, I mean, I think what happened was a lot of women realized, and again, this has to do with the second wave, where they're like, if we could only get in the boardrooms, if we could only, like, you know, get in publishing, if we could only get in these professional jobs, then we would be happy. Well, it's like, well, yeah, because when those jobs were around, they were cool and you just got to get drunk at lunch and grab your secretary's ass. Now those jobs suck and you're like, oh, ew, work is worse than it used to be. So there's this quote unquote return, which is obviously very like revisionist very frequently, is kind of, I think, just a retreat from awful working conditions, especially in the professional set. Professional jobs suck way more than they used to. And including train jobs like that aren't, you know, PMC, but like being a nurse, like my Penny girl, Pentecostal, like she's like, being a nurse was so stressful. I had way too many. We don't have enough nurses in this country because the tuition is too high and they get paid too little. It's not worth it. It's miserable. They're overloaded. They're like, I would rather stay home. I'm like, I get it.
Is this the kind of the core? I mean, this was going to be a question that I was going to ask later, but it just seems to come out now. Is this the core of the appeal?
I skipped your question too, by the way.
No. I mean,
so absurd. Basically, there's a wide range of what constitutes trad, and it's generally applied by the audience because it's, you know, very memeified. So everyone else decides you're trad. Like, you can say you're trad, but like there's, you know, some of them don't have electricity, except for their iPhones, and some of them are really modern and have their amazing stand mixers, but they just do the kind of traditional work. There's nothing that holds these women together except the idea of home.
It's funny because, like, we've broken down the fourth wall, you know, with a lot of cinema and TV, a lot of postmodern stuff where it's like, aha, there's a camera here, right? They're always wanting to make you aware of the camera being there. And that's old hat now. But we've bought into the illusion still with the influencer where, like, you forget that they've got their iPhone in their hand and they're filming that stuff. We've bought into that. That's an illusion we maintain.
Well, you know what I don't have in my home? Cameras. Like, to me, like, the very idea subverts it. And there's a lot of, like, kind of, I think, banal, like, we get it criticism where they're like, oh, you sue your tread, but you have an iPhone. That's very like, oh, you're anti-capitalist, we have an iPhone. So grow up.
Just one thing, because I mean, I want to get back to George's question, but just one thing about the internet-y stuff, because I want to move on to the kind of, I guess, real sociological meat behind this. But one of the things we say influencer, it's a word that we probably don't even think about anymore when we use it. Mm. But it suggests someone who has influence over other people, right?
Which is already questionable.
Which is very questionable, right? It's content that's consumed, but do they influence you? I mean, maybe in the very shallow stylistic way that you might adopt their fashion, but I don't know if they're influencing people's ideas or conceptions about the world or whatever it might be. And when you point this out with regard to the trad wives, that they're not preaching. They're not saying this is how you have to be trad or that one should be trad. They're just kind of exhibiting their lifestyle. It's very few.
It's not like I remember from like church, like even the Pentecostal girl where it's like, you better live right. You know, it's a lot of it is very memeified. It's exactly like the kind of like maybe skincare memes where they're like, you know, that feel when you learned, that's a little old, elderly, if you will.
Elder millennial, like,
when you finally stop drinking dairy and it cures your long COVID. It's the same thing as like, you know, when you finally started doing, I don't know, three-step cleansing for your skin. It's just not, again, influencing isn't the same as commanding, even though we would argue like whether or not it's even actually influencing. I think there are social trends. I think it has more to do with the fact that women are really unhappy.
I mean, actually, funny enough, Jordan Peterson's a good example. And we're going to get onto him or at least mention him later on. But he's an example of an influencer, right? And I think there it's an insult because he would think of himself as a philosopher or a thinker whatever, but he's merely an influencer. But he actually genuinely is an influencer. Whereas, you know, your trad wife there is not even an influencer in the less internet-y sense of the word.
Which I kind of like because that means that it's an actual women's movement, which is interesting to me. Like it started as like a meme, but like, to the degree that it's like a movement, it's kind of a, you know, incoherent, but like public discussion about what like home means and about what it means to be happy kind of as a woman. I mean, no one's happy, but, you know, it's the quote, we're all families, you know, that are unhappy or so. But it's like women are unhappy in a kind of different way on average than men. Peterson is great, especially because I realized at some point that men were angered, like progressive men. They're like mad at Jordan Peterson. They're like, such as like sexist piece of shit. Like, oh, clean your room. And like, even the fairly, even like sort of traditional, like my scoldier kind of feminist friends were like, you should clean your fucking room. Like, he's right about that.
Yeah.
And then also, like, I remember my friend Dasha was like, oh, she's like, oh, they have, like, dragon, you know, evil energy. She's like, that sounds cool. Women kind of found him, like, funny and making some good points. And these kind of progressive men were like, oh, he's such a bad patriarchal guy. And we're like, maybe you just don't want to clean your room.
Yeah, I mean, men will go to
maybe just
to,
a slur.
A great length.
I think this has less to do with his sexism, which is real, and more to do with the fact that there is a man telling you to clean your fucking room.
So I guess maybe we've kind of covered this, but I did want to just pose this kind of directly. Is, I mean, what do you think is the appeal of like watching? You know, watching these women perform this kind of stereotype of wifehood, this traditional wife. Is it just simply like, I look at this, I want to escape from my crappy job. There's no more three martini lunches. It's just all fucking emails and Teams messages and Slack. And actually, this is a possibility of escape. And like any kind of influencer or life hacker, it's like, here is the solution to all the problems. Is it more complicated than that, or is it basically? My job is shit. I want to just go and live on a farm and fucking not have to, you know, do my email job anymore.
Well, I think it within the like wide range, I would call trad wifery a discussion more than a movement, you know, about sort of what it means to be a woman and whatever. But
the trad wife discourse.
Yeah, some of it is fantasy, absolutely, certainly. And I have a big division where I'm like, bitch, do you have the recipe? Are you listing the recipe? Or are you just showing yourself making something in little bits? Because I think the instructional, like, I love Martha Stewart, and Martha is mother. Like, she's not mom or mommy or mama. You see a lot of, like, mama has become a huge thing online where it's like, you know, when you're a crunchy mama and when you're, it's like Martha is mother in both the kind of like gay sense and as a foremother. But her entire idea was like, oh, you can make things too. You can make beautiful things too. And here's what actually goes into it. And there are sort of, there are actually instructional like women with this where they have the actual recipe and stuff. And I really respect that because it's like, I respect the idea of you can make delicious and beautiful things. You can make a home too. What I kind of side eye is just the imagery. It feels like a, you know, like a fashion, like photo set of aesthetics. It's just, it's pure aesthetics, which I get too. I like pretty things, but I don't respect it the same way I do with like, hey, here's how you plant beans.
So there is an important difference within this discourse. Like, yeah, do you give the recipe or not? Because I guess then that is essentially, you know, you can follow along, you can do this yourself, or
it's no, here is the differentiation. Pure fantasy and like an element of like a woman knowledge, sharing, women sharing knowledge, which in a very like, that might be my most, I don't know if it's retrograde, but like old school, like sisterhood thing. I like women sharing knowledge. I like communities of women. Women are lonely, just like men. They don't have church or book clubs or, you know, whatever. If you're waspy kind of women's societies. And that was always a problem for women with modernity. Like, you know, some of the Mother's Little Helper stuff I wrote about I wrote about something in Jacobin about like UBI that it was like, you know, housewives went insane too. And part of it was like, they were just lonely. But, you know, I come from communities of women that like share skills and teach each other things from girlhood. It's like multi-generational. I remember like squatting and, you know, shelling beans with my mamaw. I remember before I was 12, like them just like handing me a baby. And so many of my middle class friends are terrified. Like they'll, you know, the woman will get pregnant and they'll be like, oh, I just realized I never held a baby. Like, I like the multi-generational kind of women sharing with women and people, which is, I remember people handing me kids all the time. Like there's a death of a teenage babysitter and people just being like, hey, Angie's going out for smokes, hold him. Like, I don't know. I like it.
So presumably the trad wife is a kind of welcoming the viewer into this. Here's, you know, be part of, you know, my kitchen. Here's my my children. I guess you can, there's a lot of things which you could say respond to that kind of felt need of, you know, we don't have really, you know, those kind of social interactions that we used to.
And like that means we don't have communities of women. And there's like women specific stuff, particularly with child rearing, that I think you saw the rise of like the baby book. You saw, Dr. Spock, who was such a huge revolutionary, the Dr. Spock baby book being like, just for the first time in forever, just being like, you know, it's, you can pick your baby up when it cries. You don't have to be a frigid Victorian mother. But also, if it does cry, that's normal too. And normally, you would have not only your mother, but like a mama, like a grandmother, like being like, that's not a big deal. Or here's a thing you can do to soothe them. Or, you know, even just neighbors. We don't have that. And it makes everything scary. It makes everything foreign.
Yeah.
Like not knowing how to cook is like terrifying. It's sad, women miss this stuff. And like, you can argue it's monetizable. And so it's cynical and, you know, commodified or whatever. But it fills a real gap in the market. the marketization of it, you know, it is serving, and I hate this word, it's generally reactionary, but it's serving, it's a service that used to be provided by community and family and kind of intimate spaces, which people miss. I don't think we should rely on them. I think that is reactionary, but I do think they are a wonderful byproduct of security and a functional economy and a fairly democratic economy. And yeah, bring back the factories anyway.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because like a lot of this discussion and a lot of what the desires that the TradWi phenomenon speaks to, as well as various other kind of memetic or internet-y kind of things do, is a certain alienation, which is very contemporary and is different. And often the looks like the polar opposite of the alienation that the new left reacted against in the 1960s. So yeah. Just to bring in like another meme, but you know, these things, I say like kind of ironically, but you know, memes do speak to something. They're a way that people communicate. So it's not just a kind of dumb internet thing. It's a conversation, right? And it's all things, something that lots of people are repeating. So a lot of people are saying that, you know, they look at they look at, for example, Homer Simpson. They, you know, maybe this is like Gen Z people discovering The Simpsons or something and going, wow, this guy could hold down a job. And I can't believe that. I can't believe that all these, particularly Gen Xers, were so angry about having to have this stable family life and a boring 9-to-5 job. Taking the example, actually, that the classic one is the Mike Judge film Office Space, which now is quite old, right? Because I think that came out in 1998, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, these guys who were just being bored by their office job and, you know, beat the printer, the office printer outside in like this great Luddite scene at the end, being the kind of climax of the film. And that is something which for people probably even younger than us, like younger millennials, Gen Z, are kind of going, wait, how could they be against that? They actually got a kind of solid sort of job. We don't even have that. We're just struggling around in the gig economy. How could they complain about that? And it's,
I would push back a little bit on Office Space because the inciting incident is layoffs. So they had mind-numbing jobs, but the only concession of these miserable jobs is, at least it's security. And now we don't even have that. But it is true when you hear, I there's this song that I love because it's like a beautiful song, but it's from the early 70s. And it's like, someday my baby, when I am a man, it's called Tall Buildings. They'll send me to work in tall buildings and they'll cut off my hair and there'll be no more sunrises. And they're like, shut the fuck up. Like, part of it is just like, you're a brat. Like, I that's an extremely conservative position. And I know that everyone has like ennui and, you know, like they want, spiritual or, you know, it's some kind of comfort that doesn't come from security and things like that. But it's like, oh my God, the boomers were whiners. Yeah. Have you rewatched the movie Slackers?
No, I haven't.
It's very interesting. Because again, 90s, very 90s, very Gen X. And they're like, I don't want like a retail job after I got out of college. And like, yeah, that sucks. And it doesn't pay too well. But you're going to start a tech company or a t-shirt company eventually that millennials have to rely on and not fulfill your orders. And we're screwed anyway because you don't care. Because you're like, whatever, it's punk rock, man. And then also the thing where Winona Ryder has the choice between the secure Ben Stiller character, who's like a corporate guy, and then the like bohemian Ethan Hawke character, who's like kind of a dick to her, but it's because he's like moody. And it's like, first of all, there are more than two men in the world, and you're Winona Ryder. But that was like the representative, like those are the choices you could make. You could be a square, and you can, and it's like, you had the kind of economic security where, I mean, if you weren't dumb enough to, you know, fall prey to the first dot-com crash or whatever, but like, you could have a nice life. Like, you were the last guys who got to have a nice life. And I know end of history is very traumatic. Oh no, there's no more possibilities, blah, 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 blah. Shut up. Shut up. Do you know how bad it got? I'm very anti the okay boomer thing because we're all a product of our era and conditions and blah, 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 blah. But I do have this visceral anger towards them that I can't help, at least the bougie middle class ones. And like, my mom was a teen mom and she's Gen X. So like, that's different. She never, she's like, all I want is security. But this idea of like, oh, secure life is boring. No, you're boring. Get hobbies. Like, being not bored, living in interesting times, it's not cool. It's not fun. It's not romantically bohemian. It fucking sucks.
So, I mean, is this the truth of trad then? That it is really kind of speaks to that desire for security and stability. Absolutely. Meaningful. Absolutely. Family and kind of a definition of home that makes sense, which is increasingly out of reach, or seems to be difficult for, I guess, younger millennials or zoomers. I guess, I mean, this does raise the question, is it, you know, who's influenced by the trad wife influencers? Is it the zoomers? Is it the Gen Alphas? Who is like gobbling this stuff up? Who is like really like, I'm gonna go and make every single recipe there, I'm gonna like, you know, be homesteading,
it's hard to tell,
blah blah blah.
Also because those people are so young, whenever I see them they're responding to sort of like skincare and makeup, and you know that those women are, you know, coming out of girlhood, so they're still like looking at the fun parts of being a girl, you know, the aesthetic parts, you know. And like, who knows how they're interpreting. I don't talk to them because I'm not a pedophile. I'll be interested to see, like,
I thought you were talking, talking up intergenerational relations, and now it's like, oh, I don't talk to young people.
Well, no, they're not in my community. They're just online. I don't have a parasocial relationship with them. I would love a social relationship with them, but I'm not going to be like, hey, how do you feel about trad wives? Like, I don't know. That's weird. I'm not sure how they're going to process it because they're still kind of in girlhood, which, you know, adolescence extending further and further and further. And I think kind of the, you know, the millennial perpetual, I'm a small being, I'm adulting, you know.
Well, I mean, and the trad wife for a young woman, teenage girl, could play into exactly the same sort of narcissistic kind of desires that loads of other kind of stuff does, which we don't consider trad at all. But it's basically, sure. If I'm at home making bread, my husband will admire me. Oh, I get to be admired by a man, which is like no different to any other kind of floating bullshit that you have on the internet everywhere, right? So in that regard, it's just a different aesthetic.
In terms of an aesthetic cell of an identity, there's also this kind of, Zoomers love being ugly. It's really weird. There's like, you know, the skin acceptance movement, which is interesting because it's like, I have acne, but it's beautiful. And it's like, I do think the craft based stuff is very kind of the actual home economics is very sort of appealing to girls and women generally. Even with the kind of like beauty sphere, you see them being like, oh, I use rose water instead of a product or whatever.
Just hearing you talk about that advert that you saw, I guess it kind of makes me think, like, what is the, like, somebody who's a real partisan of, you know, maybe tradwifery, if that's the way you pronounce it, narrowly, or maybe the kind of, you know, this, I guess, the wider influencer movement, if that's the thing, more generally, like, what's the defense of this? Is it that it's empowering? I mean, that's the word that comes to mind when you're describing, like, oh, you could save it off, you could use this oil. Actually, it's better to, you feel more empowered if you if you accept who you are, but then you also kind of have to go through all these processes to make that acceptance proper. But it's empowering, and it's disempowering to do what the man wants you to do. It's empowering to do what you want to do, but it just so happens that what you want to do is what we want you to do.
Well, there's a lot of arguing with someone who isn't there. Like,
it's one of the best ways to argue.
Like no one called you ugly. They might be whispering it behind your back. Who cares? No one said that, like, you're not enough. And it's like, to the people who say I'm, you know, an unhappy housewife or whatever, here's my response. And granted, most women don't do this. Most of the trad wives don't do this. Most of them are just like, because, you know, the best revenge is living well. Don't feed your haters. But there is a degree of that. And that seems very... One, it seems very miserable to me. And I realize a lot of these are just like value judgments, but it's such an intimate space where it's like, I don't like your aesthetic. It's ugly. I don't like your, like, and making actual, like, I don't know, Didion-esque criticisms of aesthetics as not only the product of our moment, but something you're deciding to do, a way you're deciding to respond. What was the question?
Well, I wanted to actually kind of move it on to men, because
great. So
I'm just I should have talked over Amber to do the segue. That would have been
peak. Yeah, Amber, if you could just mute yourself for the rest of this. Alex and I'll take it from here.
But I think, you know, I think we can establish that beyond a lot of the effectively just selling products and marketing of the trad wife meme, that there is, that it does speak to some sense of alienation, some desire to maybe do something practical with one's hands, to cook, to make use values, and also to seek out a life of maybe greater stability,
to have meaningful work, to have you know, and there's a lot of creativity in it too, like have security, a home. It's home.
Yeah. So if it speaks to that, right, what is it? To make a segue to men, because I think the first question is, if trad wives paint an image of a lifestyle, as it's called nowadays, as if lifestyle is a newfangled term. I like to pretend it is. So, you know, this lifestyle, as you call it, it suggests to men as well that they should thereby also adopt the same lifestyle, which is to say monogamous, stable husband who's there and maybe goes to work but has the wife at home. So firstly, I wonder whether this appeals to men, and surely to a certain extent it does, because there are men who buy into the trad wife thing that follow these trad wives on the internet, and even make arguments in favor of, you know, the wife being traditional, right? So I think there's something I think we should ask ourselves, and I wonder what you guys think, what this suggests to men and whether there's buy-in from men. And what the kind of sell is to men, right? Not just, oh, I'd love to have a wife at home, but whether that's a kind of credible vision. Because what has traditionally been the sell for kind of our generation and people younger, for young men, it tends to be much more kind of go out there, be entrepreneurial, mm-hmm. or get the hoes, get the bitches, get the cash, stuff like that. And the trad wife thing isn't really suggestive of that. I mean, unless you maybe fantasize having the trad wife at home while you go out and get bitches and bling. But I don't think that's exactly how it works.
No, I would say so there is like a little meme going around where like a woman like is interviews like a kid, and I'm not sure where it's from. It's very twitchy. He looks like maybe 11. And they, I guess this is what are they called, the pre-zoomers? Or the
alpha, but I'm not buying into that. I'm not doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, good, like grow up. But she asked, would you rather have money, fame, or women? It's like, why are you asking a child that? And he says, money, because then I could have the other two for free. You know, then I could get women and whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, that tracks. And I'm like, slap that child. Like, what?
Yeah.
Why are you talking to this person like
you get the money and you get the women?
Yeah, exactly. Like, slap that child. But it becomes this very, again, the generational thing, it is very hard to tell right now. But they talk about, okay, men are whatever, fantasizing about trad. They're voting much more right wing. They're doing all this stuff that is, we'll say, troubling. You know, they're shooting everybody if you're in America. but I think a lot of it is that the fantasy for them is also security. Like, they would love to be able to support a family. That the Simpsons thing that you brought up early is really interesting, because they actually did an interview with one of the head writers at the time, and they're like, well, what do you do? Because this show was so 90s. It was a single income, three kids, they own a house. And they were always struggling for money. I don't want to undermine that. The working class comedy is gone. I think maybe the last one was Malcolm in the Middle, and the peak was Roseanne or whatever.
And tellingly, F for Family is, like, in terms of animated family comedies, exists now, is contemporary, isn't bad, but it is about the 70s, right? It's not set in contemporary age.
So, like, they asked him, like, did you think of updating this? Because the Simpsons, you know, they don't age. They exist in perpetual time or whatever. And they were like, we acknowledge that, like, that economy no longer exists, and we had to make a decision. And they said, we decided to ignore it. And even though they have iPads and shit, freeze them in that particular economic times. Do you know why? Take a guess.
Because it's funny that Homer's so bad at his job.
They said because it would be too sad of a show. Which is like,
probably correct.
Probably means that they should have stopped making the show, but it would be too sad. I think one of the reasons men are, you know, quote unquote, going right wing is because they don't have access to this. I think it's the same, it's the flip side of like the trad wife thing. It will be interesting to see if like Biden's infrastructure bill produces like enough blue collar jobs that like are well paying, like skilled labor stuff where you have a union and a pension and good insurance, that it will. I mean, like, you know, if I had a kid right now, if I had a teen right now, I would not necessarily encourage them to go to college, less so if it was a boy. Like, learn a trade, for the love of God. I have a friend right now, a girlfriend who's going in for like pipe fitting, and she was a teacher, and she's training as a pipe fitter, and like she's like, I love this. I know what I'm doing. I'm making something. I'm not being screamed at by both parents.
Well, and you know what you, and you know what you, I wonder if there's not a kind of the stability of even identity there, where you know what you are. You're like a pipe fitter, and that's what you do, and you go do your job, and
pride,
you know, hopefully that remains, well, pride in the work, but also even just the knowledge that is what you are, not, well, I'm some office drone, but I'm not exactly sure what I do. And I might switch from one white collar job to another, which are all kind of frustrating, stressful, and fairly meaningless.
Impossible to describe are not in the Richard Scarry, you know, busy town books. You know, you're not a butcher, a baker. I don't know. It's hard to tell. I think a lot of them want, if not trad wives, the ability to theoretically support a trad wife. And, you know, they're much more resentful because I think this, it hit them first, which is interesting. Women's matriculation to college, has exceeded theirs. Male unemployment's a little higher.
It's worth, it is worth, I think, like making this point that often the kind of male support for trad wifery is like often understood as, you know, here are men who are scared of women. They want their proper place to be in the home, in the kitchen, but actually.
Yeah. And they want their own wife because they don't have to, so you don't have to go out and hunt for women. You just have your wife at home.
But
it is, you know, there are. Your income too. And like, you do have maybe an email job or insecure work. It was just like, I would just like, so they want a home too.
I think there's also a nostalgia for, you talked about that kind of 9-to-5 martini lunch work.
That's true. If that was offered, is still there. Yeah.
So I wanted to ask about the hustler culture thing because I'm trying to negotiate these two different things in my head and whether they're the same thing, whether they stand opposed, whether they're in contradiction. Because what you have is, I mean, Amber, you wrote something in your piece in Damage, which very similar lines to what I wrote in the issue 2 of Damage. I'm just going to quote from it. Inflation has exploded for everything from housing to groceries. People are drowning in unprecedented debt. The subway is down. The bus is late. The traffic is terrible. Everyone is so tired. And I had this piece on, which was called Disengaged, which we discussed on this podcast as well, about a sense of withdrawal, of exhaustion from hyperpolitics, from hypermedia, of being always online, of being always having demands placed upon you, of taking too long to get to work and all these kind of things, and I think the trad wife thing speaks about to that.
There's something so undignified about having so much trouble, and I know a lot of people are having to go back to a work after COVID, and they're like, didn't we just prove that we don't need to go here and commute? And I'll be the first to admit that, like, you know, there are trappings of working at home and, you know, life work division. It's still so much better than a commute. There's something so insulting about it being so difficult to get to a place you don't want to go.
Well, I mean, I'm deeply ambivalent on this question, and I would be open to hypocrisy if I said, you know, everyone should go to work because I chose a path where I'm like, I can work from home and whatever, right? So, but in anyway, I think we can establish that there is a tendency, that there's a kind of a latent desire, which is being expressed through various cultural forms of a certain sense of exhaustion, of just kind and of wanting something a little bit more stable, a little bit more meaningful, etc. It's the form that contemporary alienation takes, which is the lines along which we've been discussing. But there's also the hustler thing, right? There's the hustle culture. There is the going out, being an entrepreneur, the coach. I'm thinking now of, to take an example again from Brazil, but the São Paulo, the guy who's running third in the São Paulo mayoral election, Pablo Marçal, a guy I've written about before, who's like the worst coach, influencer, hustler type, several criminal suits against him, but is also kind of evangelical, but without being explicitly evangelical, but has all the kind of excitement around the Bolsonaristas. There's so definitely crazy. You know, that is a point that people have made, and he, you know, he plays to a constituency which is young male, like the gender gap is huge, women are just not interested in him. He plays to young men who have done high school but have not gone to university, right? And that's a constituency which maybe the left used to speak to. Maybe it's a constituency which would be seen as more less risk averse, more kind of edgy, and who buy into edginess, which is why they buy into him, because he does stupid stunts and whatever, right? And like, we can maybe roll our eyes at what young men are like, but at the same time, they've often played a kind of important political role in various different radical movements. So it's not something that to be completely kind of dismissed. Anyway, all a bit long-winded, but I'm wondering how you see, both of you see the relationship between, on the one hand, this kind of desire for disengagement, for some sense of home, etc., for quietness in some sense, for a quiet home, and this other thing, which is actually very loud and very out there.
Well, I mean, you say they're less risk averse, but like they have less to lose now. Like, you know, it risks less than being less risk averse was in the past. Do you know what I mean? Like being an online dum-dum and getting fired from GameStop for your posts is less dangerous. Like it's less of a fall. It's a shorter fall. Oh, by the way, I just looked at that woman you were describing with the Midsummer thing. Again, American stuff. Why is her shirt in English? The come and
well,
take
indeed.
It
thing. Yeah, I mean, this is the Brazilian right is obviously just absorbs U.S. stuff and imports it. But that's another episode.
I mean, the entrepreneurial stuff is, you know, there's a ton of that too. Like, here's how I live my day. You know, I wake up at 4 a.m. and I take an ice bath and then I get to day trading or whatever. And it's like, well, the danger that they are theoretically courting, what's the alternative? To get like a 9 to 5, let's be honest, an 8 to 6:30, that is really just as unstable as the stock market?
Hmm.
I think it's still
yeah, whatever other
stability.
Speculative. Yeah. Yeah. George?
Yeah. No, I think it's a very, the more unstable things are objectively, the more the stability will appeal. But I do think you're kind of right, Alex, that, you know, it ultimately is another thing which is essentially explained by alienation. And it's always seems a bit like too easy to come back to. It's like, oh yeah, because we're alienated, we want all these things that don't really make sense. A lot of them are contradictory with other things that we also want. But
yeah,
it kind of, you know,
people don't talk about it. There was a peak alienation in terms of the study of and discussion of alienation, right? Was between 1930 and 1970. Right. And you can chart this, and people have charted it, and it's kind of died off. And it coincides, not by accident, I think, with the kind of, well, you know, books written about it, or the Google Ngrams or whatever else it is. Right.
There was discussion of it. Okay.
Yeah. And that alienation spoke to, I think, or the reason that people used also the term alienation was in reference to the kind of sentiment, etc., of the kind of Fordist period of the kind of big box where you go into and you spend your time in there and it's tedious, mm-hmm. and then you leave, right? And now, ironically, that looks kind of something to be desired for in today's context of fluidity, of instability, etc., of the gig economy, precarity, and so on. But it's maybe worth bringing back also, because we need to talk, I think, about what alienation looks like in our times, and then not just think of alienation as I'm bored of my 9-to-5 job.
We're alienated from alienation and nostalgic.
We're atomized. That's the new. Yeah, that's the.
That's
new
a good
thing.
Take. Yeah,
post 2008, we went from alienation to atomization. Next,
we're kind of nostalgic for the time when the subject could be sufficiently coherent to be alienated, and now it's just kind of divided and
regular loneliness as opposed to existential loneliness. I bet a lot of people would take that. I remember that in addition to tall buildings, I always think of this Malvina Reynolds song, Little Boxes. It was if you ever saw the show Weeds, which I didn't, you know, where it's like little boxes on a hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky. And it's like,
which is based on a poem. Yeah, which is based on a poem by, well, continue. I'm going to try to remember.
The TV show is Weeds is based on a poem.
What? Written on a bathroom wall. Yeah.
of suburban struggle.
But I just remember and it's a lovely little song about like, oh, conformity, and you know, the little boxes, their houses all look the same and they're made of ticky-tacky, which is not true. Building materials were excellent at the time. That was ridiculous. Like, even when you look at Levittown, all of these planned communities really hold up. One of the reasons that you see like Detroit being dilapidated is because it has a really, really, really harsh climate up there. And it takes some maintenance to restore those houses, but they were beautiful, wonderful houses. And the whole idea of like, oh, all the houses look the same. It's like, one, have you been to Europe? Two, do I have to express my individuality with everything I own, even the place I live in? That is exhausting. Who cares? I live in it. I can hang pictures and paint and do the whole fucking thing. I don't care. Why do you care if your house, oh no, my house looks like other people's? Who gives a shit? Every day I have to be myself. I have to show my individuality. I have to express myself.
Have you been me? It's fucking exhausting.
Every day I wake up and I'm still me.
Well, so according to Christopher Hitchens, Tom Lehrer described Little Boxes as the most sanctimonious song ever written, which I think is not unfair. But I think we should maybe wrap this up unless anybody has anything else to add. I just want to maybe foreshadow some things. I think one, we have to have a discussion at some point about the digital influencer who becomes politician, because that is going to be a coming thing. It already is, but we'll have more and more cases of it as you know, kind of media swallows politics, and you know, that's the way you bring your audience, right? You create your audience and you bring it into politics. Why wouldn't you? And the other thing is about place. Which we are, we've got plans afoot, more to come. We'll announce that as they become more clear, but about place, about the role of the workplace and commuting, working remotely, whether place has any meaning, intellectual scenes in places. Please, lots of stuff about place. That's all to look forward to.
That should be the next image, yeah.
Well, we will... watch this space. Anyway, Amber, thank you very much, as always.
Thanks for having me. And, very rambling thing, I apologize, but there's so much there. It says something about how women are unhappy. Men are unhappy. We've established that. How are women unhappy?
True. And you're not going to just get happy by putting flowers in your hair and making bread and Zig Heiling. That's not going to do it for people.
Maybe for anyway, like a week or so, there'll be an initial high.
All right. Thanks, Amber. Cheers, George. Thanks for listening, listener, and catch you later. Bye-bye.